Our message scripture reading comes from James 3, verses 13 through 18. Who is wise and understanding among you? Show by your good life that your works are done with gentleness born of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not be boastful and false to the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, devilish. For where there is envy and selfish ambition, there will also be disorder and wickedness of every kind. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace for those who make peace. The message this morning, you'll find that Paul and I tend to think a great deal alike, and we follow each other's thoughts as we go from sermon to sermon, so it's not unusual for us to overlap. And so this is sort of a continuation, God's ways are not our ways, sort of part two. In fact, next week we may even have sort of a part three to it. So we like to take a main thought and take different avenues and search it more deeply that way. And I will give you a heads up, the month of August will be, all four Sundays will be based on prayer. And we will be exploring different avenues and aspects of prayer. You are a praying church, and we know that you have the heart of God. Still, it's so good to be confirmed, to be validated, and to learn something new, or maybe to try something new that we haven't done before when we think of ways to talk to our Heavenly Father. So that's what's coming up, just to give you a little insight of what we're going to be doing. The message this morning, I kind of, last time I spoke, did sort of a sprinkles message, and this one is going to be more of a tapestry or a quilt. And I must tell you that people who walk in and see your quilts, they're quite astounded. If you look at each frame, especially of this one over here to what would be to your right, each frame of a quilt or block, as they call it, sort of has a different picture to it, and yet they all go together. So we're going to share with you four stories, and these are true accounts, and each story is going to be, at once they're put together, are underneath a singular theme, and it will be much like a quilt today. So the message is still God's ways are not our ways, and we are still using Isaiah 55 for the second time, only we used it as a call to worship this morning. The running theme today of what avenue or what part of God's ways are not our ways is that of one of delayed success, or possibly even success so delayed that the person highlighted may not even see the full fruits of his or her efforts during their lifetime, or they don't see it till much later. And that waiting period is really tough, isn't it? When we sow and sow and sow, I mean, even the gardens today, I mean, you put the seed and the plants grow. I mean, you look outside and it's almost fully grown within a couple of weeks. It's just so remarkable and amazing. We're already pulling out lettuce and radishes. And sometimes in our life when we sow seeds, we wish we would see the results as quickly. But sometimes it takes longer than that. I'd like us to look at, first of all, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these scriptural individuals because you know them so well. But as we look at the Old Testament, you know Moses. You know that Moses knew the heart of God. He was so close to God that he had to turn his face away because the glory of God was so great. And yet, Moses never entered the promised land. If we look in the New Testament, we see John the Baptist. John the Baptist had the privilege and the honor to baptize Jesus. and yet he never was able to fully participate in the ministry of Jesus. In fact, John, as we know, was beheaded. Now, does that mean that their purpose was cut short or God's purpose changed? And the answer to that is no. God used them fully. He used them fully. It's just that sometimes God's purpose and God's plan extends beyond us. And what we have been carrying the torch for through our lives is passed yet to someone else. And so it's not that God is angry. It's not that God has changed his mind. It's not that God is disappointed with anything we've done. It's that God's purpose and plan is so much greater than what we can even imagine that we don't always see the full fruits of that particular label or effort. Now, I think I may have a hard time convincing you that you are a Moses or you are the John the Baptist. So I'm not going to go there this morning so much. I'm going to focus instead on four common individuals who have lived in our lifetimes or within the last 200 years. People who we can reach back in the history books or the ministry books and see them as heroes. I have four stories, like I said. And Paul is going to be reading stories 1 and 3. I'm going to be reading stories 2 and 4. And I want you to recognize and have three objectives as you listen to each of these stories. First of all, I want you to see yourself in these individuals. I want you to try to match what you do with what they do in their lives and see if you can find yourself in them. And I want you to recognize that these journeys are hard. These journeys are very hard. We know that through Moses. We know that through John the Baptist. And we're going to know it through these four individuals as well. So therefore, there will be suffering of loss during our journey. That is just part of life. 2, I want us to recognize that we may not see the fruits of our labors, but not to be discouraged. Don't be discouraged with that, because the fruits will appear. God's purpose will be revealed, and his kingdom's goal will be reached. It will be realized. The third objective is to recognize the power of your presence. Your singular existence makes a difference to this world. It makes a difference to the person you're sitting beside, in front of, or behind. Your existence makes a difference in the family line. Your existence means something. A dear friend this week, who in my opinion has a very strong ministry, she said, you know, I have a mantra, and she says, my basic thing that I say each day is, I'm going to show up. I'm going to show up. Now, when you keep it short and simple, God can work through that. You show up, allow God to do the rest. But showing up, your presence makes a difference. So think about you individually as well as you as a church, and recognize that God does use you as a foundational stone for his future plan and purpose. So we will begin by reading story number 1.
In Europe and the United States during the 19th century, many women died after giving birth in hospitals. Up to 25% of the new mothers contracted the aggressive infection commonly called childbirth fever. In the late 1840s, Dr. Ignaz Semmelweis, a young Hungarian doctor, worked in the maternity wards of a Vienna hospital. The hospital had 2 maternity wards, one staffed by female midwives and the other by male medical staff. Semmelweis noticed that the rate of death from childbirth was 3 to 5 times higher in the ward staffed by the male medical students. At that time, no one understood the relationship between germs and disease. So the only way that Semmelweis could figure out was to observe, to find out why they're dying more often with male than with female staff members. Well, Semmelweis soon realized that the male staff came straight from classes which they performed autopsies and dissected corpses. He acted on his hunch that if the men would wash their hands with a solution of chlorinated lime water before they examined the women, the mortality rate would improve. Semmelweis, of course, was correct, and the mortality rate increased substantially. One would think that Semmelweis would be applauded for his outstanding findings. Instead, however, he was widely and sharply criticized and even met with hostility to the point that he resigned his position and returned to Hungary. Semmelweis never gave up on his convictions, even when his book was published, stating the benefits of washing one's hands in the medical field. But it was ridiculed by the scientific establishment. In 1865, Semmelweis suffered a mental breakdown. He never saw the fruits of his labor. Regardless, we today benefit from the works of his hands, literally.
Story number two, true account. In the year 2011, living in Hollywood, California, a married couple named Mike and Amy Redering, they sold all their possessions, which included a very healthy boat business, to enter the missionary field in Africa. Now, Mike once stated, and you know how it is when you throw something before God, he says, now if God sends me to Africa to dig wells, that's what I'll do. And don't you know, that's where God sent him, and that's exactly what God gave him to do. That was part of it. The decision to move to Burkina Faso came after the couple realized that they were not truly in control of their lives, that God was, and that they were going to give him that control, and that they wanted to trust God fully. They wanted God to take care of them. Our lives changed after that decision, Amy once stated. Just last year, however, on January 15th, 2016, Mike was in the capital city. He and another pastoral friend, were waiting for a group of incoming missionaries when Al-Qaeda militants attacked the hotel and cafe that stood where most of the Westerners would populate. They were waiting there again for the incoming missionaries. Mike's friend managed to find a hiding spot, and he survived. Mike, however, did not. Now, Amy only lived 2 hours from the capital city, but it took 20 hours for her to hear of her husband's death. His death left behind not only Amy, but 4 of their children. They had 2 children before they left and went to Africa, and they adopted 2 while they were there, a 4-year-old boy and a 15-year-old girl. Now, Amy did return to Hollywood, California, eventually to tell their story, but she chose to bury her husband there in Africa, as was his written desire. She stated once in an interview, she said, you know, people wonder what I'm going to do now. Well, it's simple. God did not only call Mike to Burkina Faso, he also called me. She continued, "Our following God's call in our work with orphans and with widows is the most rewarding thing I can imagine." Now, Mike never physically saw the honor that was given to him at his funeral on two continents. But he did realize those wells that were dug. He did realize the Women's Crisis Center and the medical clinic that was raised. And he did see that an orphanage and school was built by Sheltering Wings, a nonprofit organization that's based in St. Louis. Now, we could possibly further research and see what's actually still remaining and standing, because we know about Al-Qaeda, we know about Boko Haram, and see whether those structures stand or not. But regardless, Mike and Amy's life, their presence made an impact. It made a difference in the lives of those people. It made a difference to those that God had called them to serve. And Mike's work will be continued by his wife. Story number 3.
Osceola McCarty was native-born in 1908 in the Mississippi State area. In the sixth grade, Osceola began realizing her dream to help other people. She dropped out of school at the time to care for her aunt, who had no children of her own to assist her. By the time Osceola returned to school, she noted that fellow students had advanced far beyond her. So she permanently dropped out of the educational system. Osceola was raised in poverty by a single mother who worked relentlessly to provide for her only daughter. Osceola did her share as well, washing and ironing. For years, she only charged $1.50 to $2 to do a bushel of laundry. Imagine that. As time progressed, she raised her prices to $10 per bushel. Still with inflation, over the next 20 to 40 years, $10 was like asking little to nothing. I know all you women and men who do laundry, you'd say, $10? Here, take it all. Regardless, Osceola saved her money in a bank account, and she never withdrew it. Her account grew to such a degree that she was encouraged to place it in savings accounts. Osceola had money to spend, but she chose to live frugally, much like we brethren. Neighbors recall how she lacked air conditioning in her home. She never drove a car, and she would push her own cart to the grocery store and back. Osceola's hometown was also the hometown of Mississippi's renowned university, the University of Southern Mississippi. At one point in Osceola's life, the university did not admit black students. However, as time passed, the university finally did, and Osceola made a contributing difference. She provided a jumpstart opportunity to any black student who was in need of education wanting to enter the University of Mississippi. She donated $150,000 thereby establishing the Osceola McCarty Scholarship. Here were the fruits of her labor, of a woman with only a sixth grade education, a woman who as a young girl dreamed of helping others to opportunities she could not obtain herself. She once stated, "I can't do everything, but I can do something to help somebody. And what I can do, I will do." Osceola, during her lifetime, saw some of the fruits of her labor, yet her legacy will well extend beyond her to touch the lives of many that she will never meet here on earth. And now Cheryl will present the last story.
The last story is actually a dream. It's a dream I had when my father, Richard Narr, passed away. So this is my final story. Let me give you a little bit of background. I was raised on the Sunnycrest Farm just 10 miles south of South Whitley, and my father spent his career as a public school educator, administrator, a farmer, and a pastor for numerous churches in a four-county area. He obviously touched many lives. Still, as he approached his years in the 90s, he would occasionally and privately question why he lived so long and why other family members and friends had not. He sometimes lamented about why so few visited him at Peabody home or at the farm when he had spent so much time and energy visiting others as a pastor or as a friend. Now, I don't know my father really wanted me to share that, but I think we need to see people as they are. And this was just a side of my dad. It wasn't the whole side of him. He was not a depressant. In fact, he had a very keen sense of humor, and he delighted in telling stories, and maybe that's why he wanted more visitors. In fact, he had so many visitors that when Christmas cards would come, you could count them in the 70s. Recently, while annual conference, Laura Meyer stopped by, and she and I were chatting. She's the pastor's wife at Blue River Church. And she said, "You know, when we go to Manchester," she goes, "I really miss dropping in and talking with your folks because they were so easy to talk with and to laugh with." Now, my parents worked as a team, so I don't mean to diminish my mother's contributions in any way. The dream simply focused on my father due to his recent passing when my mother was still living. Now, my father was buried in South Whitley Cemetery on my birthday in April the year of 2010. And that summer, I had a dream. Now, not all dreams are significant, but this one was. The setting was the old farmhouse in which I was raised. And in the dream, I'm standing in the kitchen, and sunshine is beaming through the window, and I was compelled to go outside. Now, very few of my dreams are in color, so in the fact that this dream was in color again when I awoke, it was significant. When I walked outside, which I've never done in a dream before, in place of the windmill and the hand pump that stood there, in place of the cement sidewalk that led to the barn, and in place of the vast yard where the maple tree that I loved to climb as a child, in place of those familiar items was only one thing. Flowers. Flowers, as far as I could see, so thickly growing together that there was no space in between them, and I could see their colors. They were vibrant, and the breeze was blowing, and they were gently waving. And so, of course, that's an invitation. And so I walked amongst the flowers. Now, only in a dream can you walk amongst flowers and not tread upon them. But I didn't appear to be treading on them at all. I was just enjoying them, and I would brush my hands across the tops, and I would enjoy the flowers individually as well as a complete group. Now, it occurred to me during this dream, I'm thinking this while I'm dreaming, it occurred to me that those flowers represented the lives that my father had touched, and that those bloomed because of his encouragement, because of his love, and because of his attention. A legacy that I don't think he fully realized. A legacy of beauty and of grace that continued on past him. As I awoke, I was wrapped in wonderment of the moment, and I couldn't help but ask myself, what legacy will I leave, and whose lives will be enriched due to my presence? Dear friends, do we make a difference? Does our existence, does our being there, showing up, does that make a difference? Absolutely. Not only individually, but collectively as a church. Our purpose in this life is to sow those seeds, to plant kindness, and to express God's grace. It is to build relationships of love. We leave the results to God. And what do we learn from these stories? What is the will of God and the goal of his kingdom? Well, there are two main lessons here, I think. I think first and foremost, that he is to be glorified so his glory can shine to redeem the lives that are lost. We often hear the phrase, saving souls. I believe when God called us to be fishermen, he asked us to hook individuals. And how do we hook those? By sowing those seeds of love and compassion. How can we hook anyone and bring them to Christ if it's not through love, through forgiveness, through caring? And we allow God then to save those souls. We bring them to Christ, and Christ, through Jesus's blood, redeems them. So it is imperative, I believe, that we keep our eyes always on God and that we be obedient to the work that he calls us, because God, in his plan and in his wisdom, will bring about the fruit of our labor. Second lesson is that we may not see the beauty now, but we need to trust the process. We need to trust this good shepherd. We need to trust this master gardener. We need to trust this creator of heaven and earth. We need to pray for wisdom. We need to ask God to grant us courage to face each hour of each day. So let us come to God with our arms wide open to serve him, to serve the one whom we adore.